Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Big Ten Hoops weekly show, sponsored by Brewbags Coffee. We are here to talk about the first full week of conference play in the new year. So, I feel like the conference is a little bit of a cluster right now. I think there's teams starting to separate themselves, but there's also teams that are struggling, and, you know, there's teams that we maybe thought were going to be good that are proving that they're not very good, but there have also been some present surprises. You know, and really, speaking of surprises, we are not kidding when we say this, but really the team of this first week of the calendar year of 2024 has to be none other than the Minnesota Golden Gophers, who probably for their first time ever since we've been recording the show picked up a 2-win week in conference play. Going into Ann Arbor and winning a close one against the Wolverines, and then fending off a insert adjective here Maryland team at the Barn. And so 3-1 in conference play. I guess, Brett, the question that everyone in the greater Minnesota area wants to know is, are the Golden Gophers the second best team in the Big Ten?
You know, not to throw water on the fire immediately, but really, you really set me out to dry there. Jeez. No, they are not the second best team in the Big Ten, but and I did go back and check this while you were introducing this segment, and it is the first time in this is the third season we're doing this podcast. It is the first time that they have picked up two conference wins in a row, to say nothing of in the same week. So, I mean, before anything, like, you know, shout out to Minnesota, shout out to Ben Johnson. We've given them a lot of crap over the last couple years, and you know, it has to be exciting for their fans, and it's exciting to just see teams you don't expect to play well. So that's the good. I think, like, we're seeing a renewed sense of, you know, just order and shot making from their backcourt. And I think you can't talk about these most recent games without talking about Elijah Hawkins and Mike Mitchell. Hawkins had 14 on efficient shooting against Michigan, and then turned around in 10 points, but again, being efficient. And they're really kind of getting four double figure scores against Maryland tonight. And I believe they had 5 against Michigan. So it's not really falling on one guy to night in and night out the way we thought it might be with Dawson Garcia, but they're getting contributions kind of all over the board from the guys they're playing. Joshua Ola-Joseph has continued to come on strong, and they look like they're focused and playing way better basketball now. So let's talk about the other side of this. The highest rated team in KenPom they've beaten is number 52, Nebraska. They have lost to Missouri, San Francisco, and Ohio State. So they've kind of made a trip around the bottom of the conference so far in terms of, you know, their recent win streak. And we'll get to that a lot later. But so I think it's obviously good that they're stacking wins. We talk about this all the time. Like, they're winning games. That's never going to be – we're never going to say anything bad about that. But their schedule is about to take a significant jump in competitiveness, and I'm not sure we'll see the same results going forward.
Okay, I'm gonna take that Debbie Downer-ness and maybe make the people a little bit happier here. So, you know, they're on a 7-game winning streak right now, which is tied for the longest in the conference with Purdue. And, you know, I wouldn't poo-poo their resume as much. I mean, I don't know the Missouri losses. Missouri losses, not great, but, you know, not a bad loss. Not a great loss, but not a bad loss. You can't really, you know, the Ohio State losses, fine on the road. The San Francisco loss stinks, but yeah, you know, those are 3 losses, right? Like, everything else is pretty clean. When you know, if you want to start talking about the tournament now, it might be a little bit premature, but, you know, I mean, win in conference play over Maryland, win in conference play over Nebraska, like, yeah, you know, I don't know that you necessarily need to poo-poo those. So, you know, the other thing that I'll say just about the way that they play, I mean, I think that there's a toughness to you know, just they've got big guys on the defensive end, right? Like, Ola-Joseph is a monster of a man on the perimeter, and you know, continues to, you know, play well on defense. They've got, you know, an alpha who can make big shots in Dawson Garcia, and, you know, Mike Mitchell has been pretty explosive, you know, when running things offensively. So they've got the makings of it here. You have to give credit to, you know, Ben Johnson, it felt like this program was left for dead, even earlier this year. But they're tough, they're fighting, and they're relevant now, which is, I think exceeds expectations for what we thought going into their season this year.
Those are all fair points. Sorry, I didn't mean to get super Debbie Downer. I just think like context is kind of key for some of these things. But I have been super impressed by, especially by the, as I mentioned earlier, Hawkins and Mitchell have really, really come into their own, and they're hitting a ton of big shots. They're playing good defense. You mentioned Ola Joseph. We're seeing contributions from Cam Christie, which is notable for a Big Ten freshman, I would say. It's definitely a very different looking team than it was last year, even if a lot of the guys are still the same. And I think that's a credit to what Ben Johnson's doing in Minneapolis so far.
So we will move on to talk about another team that went 2-0 this week, the Wisconsin Badgers. So they had two home games, one against the Iowa Hawkeyes, one against Nebraska, two teams that tend to, speed things up offensively. Wisconsin took care of business in both of them. They're the only team that's still undefeated in conference play at 3-0. And they're sort of looking like the Wisconsin of old, both in style and just in, in record. Don't want to make too much of kind of two wins where they took care of business at home. But what were your initial thoughts on seeing the Badgers play this week?
I think you have to start when you're talking about this Wisconsin team now by talking about how they've looked offensively. This team currently ranks 7th in the country in adjusted offense. They were 140th last year with a lot of the same pieces. So it says a lot that they've been able to kind of develop a slightly different style of play. They're not as reliant on the three ball this year, although in Nebraska specifically, we saw the reemergence of Connor Asijan from the depths of the bench, and he came on and hit four threes in that game, when it was definitely still a game. So it was good to see him contributing there and getting back into hopefully what's more consistent playing time. But this team looks just so much more like not easygoing, but like less uptight and less, rigid with the ball on offense. The offense is flowing a lot more. And I think that has a lot to do with guys like AJ Storr and John Blackwell, who are a lot better at getting to the hoop than, this team has been in the last year or so in the absence of Johnny Davis. So I think that there's the offense is leading the charge this team this season. And that's not to say their defense has been bad, but, Iowa and Nebraska definitely put up points. And I think Nebraska specifically made a ton of really tough shots, Tomi Naga specifically. There's a lot to kind of talk about there. But I think this Wisconsin team looks focused and driven and capable on the offensive end, which is definitely a good sign for the Badgers as they move forward.
Yep, they're likely heading towards a top 20 ranking this week, so they'll look to continue that momentum. The final team that went 2-0 this week was the Purdue Boilermakers, and I know that it's boring when we always talk about Purdue, and they took care of business again. Two interesting wins this week. First, they went on the road and won at Maryland, who kind of looked like had started to turn their season around, came into that game on a 5-game winning streak. But I mean, Purdue made very quick work of Maryland there in a game that, the final score of 67-53 is probably a little bit closer than what it actually was. This game was, Purdue took it to them and was up 20 plus in the first half. But their second win was maybe a little bit more interesting, where they beat, a surprisingly resilient Illinois team. And we're going to talk about Illinois a little bit more in a second. But what I thought was so interesting about their win on Friday against Illinois was that it was not Zach Edey dominating that game that led them to victory over the Illini. It was a breakout performance from Trey Kaufman-Wren, who had 23 points on 12 shots. And, Lance Jones contributed with 17 as the second leading scorer. So, I think it's really important because on a big stage, Purdue showed that it doesn't have to be, their three sort of ringers that, we've talked about ad nauseum, over the last couple of weeks and who really showed in big games against non-conference opponents this year. They can win with anyone, and that's got to be a scary prospect for the rest of the conference and really the rest of the country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we knew a game like this was going to come eventually. You know, Edie played 23 minutes with four fouls, and by the end of the game was kind of just subbing out on a possession basis. And I think that this is good. It's good. We didn't know that this game would come against a Purdue team that doesn't really have a an Illinois team that doesn't have a like traditional big man that plays a lot. Now that Danger is kind of being relegated to more of a deeper bench role. But yeah, we talked a lot, I think, early in the season about what Trey Kaufman Wren can bring to this team, and kind of he was in that group of guys that needed to step up as a you know, a bigger role player, and he absolutely did that on Friday. So again, great to see. I think, you know, the disparity of, you know, the minutes without Edie have not been haven't been many of them, and especially when the game has been in doubt. So it was good to see Purdue kind of rally. And it was good to see Illinois kind of take a big hit early. I mean, they were down 11 almost immediately after the game started, I think still kind of adjusting to higher level competition without Terrence Shannon. But, you know, that wasn't going to be enough. And Purdue shot well from three, 47% from three. They're about equal turnovers, and they won the rebound battle by a healthy margin. So that's, you know, when that happens, good things are going to happen for this Purdue team.
Speaking of the Illini, let's take a few minutes to talk about them. So, you know, their loss to Purdue was their second game of this past week, and their first game, which was really their first major opponent post the Terrence Shannon news that we spent a lot of time last week talking about, they hosted their rival Northwestern Wildcats at home, and they whooped the crap out of them. They beat them by 30, and you know, really the story in that game for the Illini on offense, similar to their game against Purdue, is kind of the emergence of Marcus Domott as their number one guy on offense. He had 32 on 15 shots, 11-15 from the field, also added 6 assists and 5 rebounds. And I mean, you know, the thing with this Illinois team is, you know, you kind of wonder, like, okay, Terrence Shannon goes down. How do you account for, you know, all the scoring that you lost? You know, is it does one guy have to step up? Do they all have to step up as a team? I should say, in this game against Illinois, you know, Harmon stepped off the bench and, you know, added 20 points in 29 minutes as well. So it wasn't, you know, 100% the Damask show, but I think Damask is showing that, you know, he's okay being their alpha and their guy, which, you know, that's looking like a really, really nice pickup from them in the transfer portal this year. But I guess maybe the question for you is, I think, you know, Illinois checks the box of showing their resiliency, and, you know, showing that, you know, this isn't just going to be a wasted season now that their best player's gone. But the question for me, Brett, is, do you think this is sustainable?
I think you can actually answer that question by looking back at the Purdue game. I think we saw what happened right out of the gate. They went down by double digits a couple minutes into the game, and it took Edie getting into foul trouble, which he rarely does, for them to even start attempting a comeback. So I think the answer lies somewhere in the middle. I think they have enough talent, They have talent. They've got Domask. Hawkins, we've talked about a lot, but has settled into kind of that Swiss Army role you've talked about. You know, we're seeing more of Harmon and less of Ty Rogers, which I think is going to end up being part of the problem. Not that Harmon's not good. I think he can give this team a lift, but this team still doesn't have a point guard. And this team has 6 guys that they play 20 minutes or more. And if we're 3 games into the conference schedule and it's already looking like that, and I know I harp on depth a lot, especially as we kind of get down through February. And sure, they don't have to play, you know, they got a Purdue game out of the way. They got a Northwestern game out of the way. Those are like tough defensive minded teams that play pretty physical. But I don't know that when it gets to mid February, that these guys are going to have much left in the tank. I think we've seen it happen with teams that kind of routinely have a 6-7 man rotation and they just run out of gas. They stop being able to hit jumpers. Not saying that this will happen, but it's something to watch out for as things happen. And I think the lack of a true point guard is really going to exacerbate that. If guys like Domask and Harmon are going to have to use more energy to create on offense instead of kind of being in the flow of how Underwood likes to run with this team specifically, I think that some offensive issues could be on the horizon. But as of right now, they're still capable of giving anybody a game. I think Underwood, like we've talked about, is doing a really good job coaching this year.
Yeah, and maybe I should just emphasize that I agree with what you just said. I think Underwood's doing a really, really good job coaching this year, which has not been the case in past years. So that gives Illinois a puncher's chance. I agree with you. While I think it can be like misguided sometimes to harp on depth in the college game, I do think Illinois, I mean, you can't play the problem. I feel like the problem is more that they'll play 3 to 4 guys like 35 plus minutes a game. And you just, you know, you can't do that and expect to survive the grind of the Big Ten. So we know they're thin there. You know, it's funny. I was debating whether we should bring up Ewing theory or not when I saw that Illinois result against Northwestern earlier in the week. But I do not think it's going to be sustainable with the way the roster is constructed. And it has less to do with Underwood as a coach, and it's more just, I think, because of their depth issues. But, you know, we'll see. Other teams will have injury issues, and, you know, Domask is producing like the kind of guy that can carry a team, so we'll see if he still can. Switching over to the Northwestern Wildcats now, despite that lopsided loss on Tuesday, they turned around and took on Michigan State at home and handed the Spartans their third consecutive loss in Evanston, turning into a house of horrors for Michigan State. But, you know, Northwestern, a team that, you know, we all know very well, is not an offensive machine by any means. They did whatever they wanted against Michigan State. They shot 54% from the field, put up 88 points. All five of their starters scored in double figures. And it was Ty Berry leading the way with 22 points. But what was the most surprising to me about this game was just how Northwestern controlled it, you know, from start to finish. Michigan State, and you know, we'll talk about this in a second, but, you know, Michigan State came into this game really looking like, you know, they'd sort of turned a corner. And, you know, Northwestern, it's so funny, right? Like, I still have trouble coming to terms with the fact that, like, Northwestern actually was, you know, the team that finished in second place in the conference last year. You know, I mean, you all remember there was this big tiebreaker scenario that they ended up on the right end of. But, yeah, I know they have the Chicago State loss, but I mean, you look up at this Northwestern team and they are 11-3 right now, 2-1 in conference play, and they keep cruising along. I mean, you know, I don't think we have any reason to expect that these types of performances, especially at home, aren't going to continue throughout the rest of the year, do we?
Very interesting question. I think the story I want to talk about from that Michigan State game is the turnover battle. You know, in addition to both teams shot pretty well. I think the Spartans averaged 1.1 points per possession, and Northwestern was all the way at 1.35. So they were shooting. They played very good offensively. They turned the ball over 5 times in a 65 possession game, whereas Michigan State turned the ball over 13 times. Northwestern is currently 8th in the country in turnover percentage on offense, meaning that they turn it over 8th fewest. And that's what's going to keep them in games. Playing smart, playing hard, physical defense is going to keep them in games. And, you know, I think we just kind of have to accept the fact now that you're going to be able to count on Barnheiser, Barry, and Langborg to get you points this season. I still think their lack of depth in the front court could hurt a little bit. I mean, they're running out basically 4 guards, and yeah, like I'll call Barnheiser a wing, but so they could, you know, Michigan State's not a bad matchup for them in that regard, just given the size of the guys that they're running out and the fact that they can't take advantage of Northwestern in the post. But we're getting pretty consistent offense from a number of guys in Northwestern. They're top 50 in the country in KenPom on offense, despite playing at a pretty slow tempo. And they're doing enough to win games. And it's looking like that Chicago State game is just kind of an aberration. And that Dayton win is looking a lot better as the season goes on. So I think they're putting themselves in a pretty good spot right now, all things considered, even with that drubbing at the hands of Illinois.
It's funny, right? Because I actually think the depth issue. So, you know, we just talked about depth issues with Illinois. I think they matter less when you're talking about a team that shortens the game by playing good defense, not turning the ball over, and like not needing to basically outscore the opponent to win. And I think that will, you know, that's potentially a reason why the depth issues won't matter as much. But I mean, you know, Barnheiser's taken a nice step this year. I mean, and so has Ty Berry for that matter. You know, Langborg's doing what he did last year, right? And so, you know, you put it all together, and I mean, at least with those four guys, I mean, yeah, you know, they can't match Purdue's top four, even though they beat them already. But like, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a better, you know, top four, top to bottom on both ends of the floor of any team in the conference. You know, I think there's obviously there's more talented, you know, there's more athletically talented players scattered throughout, you know, and I think there've been teams that have surprised us with, you know, like Wisconsin, for example, that, you know, are really good top to bottom too. But I don't know. I think the thing that we're all waiting to see from this Northwestern team is when does this little like year and a half, you know, when does this year and a half stretch of like play turn back into regular Northwestern? And I don't think it's happening. I think despite Chris Collins' horrible like track record for wins and losses in his tenure there, like he's got this team looking like they're like a tournament team. And, you know, I think they're, you know, with Bowie's leadership, they expect to win. You know, they play defense like they're going to win. And they've now got, even though they're not like the most athletic, you know, athletically talented guys, they've got horses on offense that, you know, expect to execute and carry them to wins in conference play. So they've got a tough test coming up this next week. They've got two road games. We will see if they pass that. And then, you know, I guess moving on to Michigan State. I mean, they whooped the crap out of Penn State earlier this week. I watched some of that game and I thought like, okay, they figured it out, you know, and they got the win against Baylor, you know, a couple of weeks ago to finally give themselves a quality non-conference win. You know, I wasn't going to be at the point where we were going to start talking about them as a tournament team, but I thought after that Penn State game, like, okay, you know, they'll be ready for Northwestern and Izzo's turn things around. Not the case. They still sit there at 1-3 in conference play after this loss to Northwestern. And it feels like, I mean, it feels like they're going to grind, claw, and, you know, have to muscle their way to a tournament bid and not get too high, not get too low. Were you surprised, especially after that Penn State game, that they didn't show better against Northwestern?
Yeah, I was. I mean, you knew that Northwestern was going to come out more determined after losing by 30 to their in-state rival. But, and I think Michigan State's defense was really not up to the task tonight. But again, like I mentioned earlier, they shot the ball pretty well. I mean, they left some points at the free throw line and they turned the ball over kind of a lot, but they still shot well. And so, you know, we're seeing them at least dig out of the hole they started in from three specifically. They were 9-for-19 tonight, but it comes down to like everything else we talk about. I mean, Malik Hall didn't score tonight in 26 minutes. That's unacceptable for a player of his caliber and experience. They're not getting much from any of their bigs, and so you can't have guys like Hall just disappear during games. Walker is still doing a lot of the heavy lifting for this team, and that's going to be unsustainable at this point. And I think when you play teams that play defense like Northwestern does, you got to get more out of Haggard or Akins or, you know, even like Holloman or some of the younger guys. And losing Jeremy Fears definitely hurts. He's still not playing. And I don't assume he will be the rest of this year, but I mean, we talk about a lot of teams with the need for the role players to step up and whether that's offensively or defensively, that wasn't there tonight. So I think, you know, Michigan State still has, you know, we know a known quantity in Izzo coaching. We know a lot about these guys. They've got talent, but it's going to get tricky down the stretch if they can't pull out some of these games. And this one was no exception.
All right, moving on. So we've talked about some teams that done well, some teams that maybe left a little bit to be desired this week. Want to quickly hit on three teams that split their games this week. So Indiana, Nebraska, and Ohio State all went 1-1 this week. Indiana knocked off Ohio State in the Saturday night Fox nationally televised game. And, you know, the main highlight to call out there is the return of Xavier Johnson, which this is sort of will be an interesting inflection point to look at on Indiana's season to see if his presence kind of catapults them to better play. The other thing maybe to highlight for that game is Bruce Thornton and Roddy Gale going combined 7-for-34 and Ohio State only losing by 6. So I don't know what to make of that, but Indiana, you know, earlier in the week went to Lincoln and lost to Nebraska in what was a important win for them. Nebraska lost to Wisconsin, as we previously talked about, and then Ohio State beat Rutgers at home before their loss to Indiana. So 1-1 starts for those three teams. Maybe, Brett, of those three teams, Indiana, Nebraska, and Ohio State, maybe what's your top one or two as things, you know, to note from watching them this week?
I'm gonna start with Ohio State, because this is a trend that I noticed during the West Virginia game, and or even the Penn State. We can even go back to the Penn State game. Ohio State has a significant issue finishing games. They had a big halftime lead against West Virginia. I believe they were up by, as much as 14. And then that came down to overtime. They were up by 17 in the first half against Rutgers. That ended up being a 4-point game. And then at Indiana, they were, I believe, tied going into halftime. There was a 1-point game at halftime, and then they ended up losing by 6. And I don't know what it is, but this team cannot just, against decent competition, has had trouble in the last month stringing together complete games. And so it was kind of inevitable when they went into this this game against Indiana at halftime tied, that I just had a bad feeling. I just thought they were going to lose this game, and that ended up getting borne out. And I think that one's maybe not as fair, but because Assembly Hall is always hard to play, and Indiana has seemingly sort of started figuring a couple things out offensively. But I don't know what it is. Ohio State just has issues in the second half, and that's kind of what I'm looking at if they really want to be a team that makes a mark in the Big Ten and advances to the NCAA tournament. They're going to need to put together some more complete games.
All right. And then we'll close off with the bad for this week. So, yeah, and frankly, like, the reason we're still talking about these teams is we just don't know, right? Like, the conference is such a jumble, even at the bottom, that there aren't really any teams that we can write off and ignore, even though we really, really wanted to do that with Minnesota earlier in the year. Rutgers, Michigan, and Maryland all go 0-2 this week. I think kind of different complexion to each of those two teams. You know, Rutgers lost both their games on the road. I think with them, their defense, I think, let them down this week, which is kind of what they hang their hat on, but did not have good defensive performances in Columbus or Iowa City. With Michigan, they seem to be crumbling, less so from an X's and O's standpoint, but more so from like a coaching and competitive standpoint. Lose at home to Minnesota, and then lose another close-ish game at the Palestra to Penn State. A lot of turnover and really sloppy rebounding are doing in what, you know, should have been a halfway decent offensive team, but they're sort of, the fundamentals are letting them down, you know. And then Maryland, you can't really blame them for the loss at home to Purdue, and they get the reality check, you know, at the barn against Minnesota, that, you know, Minnesota might be for real. So you know, 0-2 weeks for all three of these teams, all struggling for different reasons. What do you make of what you saw out of these three teams? Maybe your one or two biggest takeaways.
I think my biggest takeaway is that we're not going to be able to tell who the worst team in this conference is for some time. Every time we jokingly talk about it offline, something new ridiculous happens. I think the biggest thing was Rutgers actually scored the basketball. It was against Iowa, so that doesn't really count. But, you know, 77 points is something, I guess. They still have the 227th best offense in the country. But again, you talk about how they lost that game because of their defense, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, Ben Krikke had maybe his best game as a Hawkeye. Peyton Sanford had 24 points, and Iowa was just walking into these shots that you don't expect to get against Rutgers, and it's a little surprising. And I do want to shout out Owen Freeman, making me look kind of dumb, because he's been way better than I thought he was going to be this year. So good for him at Iowa. But I mean, I think, and you talk about Michigan too, and you talk about the turnovers. I mean, today against Penn State was borderline unacceptable. They turned the ball over 26% of the time for 19 turnovers over the game in a 72 possession game. And it just seemed like they had no idea how to handle a basic half court trap that Penn State was throwing, not only at them, but that Penn State throws at everybody, and that Mike Rhodes has done for years. I mean, and Penn State just was able to take the ball whenever they wanted, basically, on defense. And Michigan was never really able to get set into an offense, and they blew a 14-point first half lead. So I think, you know, we might have expected some struggles there, but I still have absolutely no idea what's going on with Maryland. You know, we've talked about the offensive issues, and you said, like you said, losing to Purdue at home is nothing to hang your head on. But I mean, just, oh man, bad all over the place, from shooting today against Minnesota, 17 turnovers, 26% against a team that's not known for its defense. I don't really know how they turn it around from here, if I'm being honest. All right. So we are happy to announce that this podcast is brought to you by Brewbags Coffee Company, and you can rediscover your ritual with Brewbags Coffee Company and their single serving flavored cold brew pouches. Whether you're looking for an easy way to make great cold brew, to save time in your busy morning, or to have coffee your way while you are on the road, Brewbags are so easy you can brew them in your sleep, and they are so delicious you will want to wake up. You can still enjoy free shipping to celebrate the launch of Brewbags by using discount code LAUNCH10 to take 10% off your order at brewbagscoffee.com. Thanks again to Brewbags for sponsoring this podcast.
All right, and in happier news, we're going to talk about what's to come this week. So we'll head into the preview. We'll try to be as brief as possible. I'll kick us off with Tuesday. First, we have Indiana heading to Jersey Mike's Arena to take on Rutgers. So I am, as far as what to look at this matchup, I think, you know, we'll see if Clifford Marie can shut down Khalil Ware. I know we've talked about how he hasn't been playing like he played to start out the season this year. So he'll get, you know, probably one of his toughest defensive matchups yet to date. You know, Xavier Johnson had a good first game back. We'll see what happens on the road. Yeah, you know, Rutgers needs a win, and this is an opportunity not to get Indiana's tournament profile numbers still, like, don't look great. So really, Rutgers needs this win if they want to sort of save their season and start turning things around. You know, I was going to say they've avoided the bad losses up to this point, but I don't know that I can say that anymore after their Iowa loss. But nonetheless, they go back home, have a chance to right the ship. I think it's a very winnable game for them. And then Purdue heads to Lincoln to take on Nebraska. If you want to check out the number one team in the country, you can get in for as low as $8 if you're in the greater Lincoln area. Yeah, I think Nebraska actually has the size. You know, they're one of the few teams that might have the size that they can match up with Purdue. And, you know, their offense is explosive and fun. This feels like one that should be really, really tough for, you know, Purdue to go in and get in there and survive. We'll see. You know, Purdue's battle tested, so it's not like they're not familiar with how to go in there and went on the road. Tickets are going for $8. You wonder what the environment's gonna be like there, but they showed well taking care of business against Indiana earlier this week. I think that game's gonna be close and fun on Tuesday night against Purdue.
Yeah. So unrelated, you and I are going on a road trip on Tuesday. So moving on to Wednesday, the first game is Northwestern going to the cavernous Bryce Jordan Center. This is going to be really interesting because, as I just mentioned, Penn State really likes utilizing traps in the half court set, and they press a lot. And I'm interested to see, you know, if that throws Northwestern off at all. Northwestern, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, eighth in the country in least turnover percentage. You know, they take care of the basketball. They don't beat themselves. Penn State's going to try and speed them up and, you know, just keep driving to the basket. You know, Ace Baldwin and Kanye Clary definitely are a high scoring duo. But the rest of Penn State's supporting cast is going to need to hit their shots consistently and not just in the second half as they did against Michigan if they want to make this a game. We're also, I think, you know, Wahab could be a bit of an issue for Northwestern. So I'm curious to see what they do to kind of combat him in the middle. But I think Bowie's going to be too good with the ball, and Northwestern should be able to escape Happy Valley with a win. Then we go Wisconsin going to Ohio State. You know, Wisconsin had their season ended by Ohio State last year, so I think there should be a chip on their shoulder, so to speak, and it should be a pretty close game. I think, you know, Ohio State's going to want to shake out of their shooting funk, and it's not always the best time to do it against Wisconsin. But I think that the inside duo of Okpara and Key will be able to prevent some of the Badgers' straight line drives to the rim. I think this is a pretty good toss up game. So I think really either team, whoever imposes their will more around the rim, should be able to come away with a win.
On Wednesday, we have a matchup of teams that have lost two in a row first when Michigan heads to Maryland. regardless of whether this game's watchable or not, I think there are actually some interesting one-on-one matchups that could be fun. I think, you know, when Jameer Young and Doug McDaniel go at it from the point guard position, I think that'll be a matchup of the two most skilled players on the court. And you know, I could definitely see a game where both of those guys score 20 plus and they have a fun duel with each other. I also think that the matchup of the bigs is going to be interesting. You know, Terrace Reed's had issues with athletic bigs this year, and that's exactly what Julian Reese is. So, you know, I'd watch that matchup early to see if any of those guys get in foul trouble as a key factor in that game. And then in what has an opportunity to either be an efficient low post scoring matchup on both ends or a potential brick fest if both of them start shooting threes, the Donta Scott Olivier Conway matchup I think could also be fun and an adventure. And then after that, Michigan State heads to Illinois. Both of these teams are coming off a loss as well. You know, we just spent a few minutes talking about how Illinois' depth could be an issue. You know, I don't think, you know, Michigan State plays a similarly perimeter oriented offense. And so I think this one actually has the potential to be super high scoring and not, you know, where the bigs like aren't super relevant. And so, you know, both of these teams kind of have to shake off games where, you know, they weren't at their best. The environment in Champaign has been good thus far, even, you know, post Terrence Shannon news. So I think we'll really see if Illinois is still for real here, because you know, this is a game they should win if you still expect them to be a tournament team or even one that's in the top quarter of the conference. At the same time, you know, the depth is such a glaring issue. And, you know, if Michigan State has turned things around, this is a game that they should get.
Moving into Friday, a surprisingly intriguing game when Minnesota heads to Assembly Hall. And this is one of the first times we'll kind of figure out what Minnesota is made of. I think there's a lot of really interesting matchups. I think Garcia and Ware is obviously going to be the headliner. And I think, you know, Minnesota is going to really try and get Garcia going on the perimeter to open up driving lanes for Mitchell and Hawkins. They're going to need Ola Joseph to keep crashing the glass. And, you know, Ware is going to definitely try and bully Garcia inside where he's a little more vulnerable. I think another interesting matchup is going to be how Minnesota decides to defend Malik Renu. I think he's also had some trouble when you get bigger guys. So I think if Ola Joseph can really get in there and be physical, he's a little undersized, but he's very athletic and could give Renu some fits around the rim. Although Renu has definitely been shooting it a lot better recently. And you know, the Xavier Johnson being back gives a new dimension to Indiana. I'm still not 100% sold personally that their offensive struggles will get figured out, but this is as good of a time as any, I guess, to see if they're on the right track. And then whatever the opposite of an atomic brickfest is, Nebraska-Iowa is going to be exactly that. Each team could score 100 points, and I wouldn't be really surprised, I guess. I mean, Nebraska has been shooting the ball well. I was a little surprised at how little Tominaga was involved relative to how well he was shooting against Wisconsin specifically. He was making pretty much anything, even contested. And I think he only had 9 or 10 shots. So you'll want to see them scheme him some more shots. Nebraska's been able to hold their own enough on defense this year. And I think that they have the size to bother Owen Freeman. The rest of Iowa does not really impart a lot of terror into teams. So this is one that Nebraska really should be able to, especially if they are serious about making the NCAA tournament. They'll need to win this game in Iowa City.
All right, moving on to Saturday. So in our first game, we've got Northwestern heading to Wisconsin. So, you know, if the last game is indicative of how the style of play in this game will be, we should expect both teams to score in the 80s and for this to be a game of high flying offense that these two programs are traditionally known for. That was a joke. Or if they revert to like what these programs are known for historically, this will probably be a game in the 50s where it's a little bit ugly and the defense is sort of anchored down. And, you know, that's what you'd expect for a cold 11 a.m. Central start on a game at the Kohl Center. Look, I think the key to this game for Wisconsin being able to win is Steve Crowell. Northwestern's bigs do not like you know, do not like going out to guard. They are big, burly guys that want to rebound and defend the post. And we know that Steve Crowell can spread the floor. I think Wisconsin's offense is playing more consistently, but with how good, you know, Northwestern is at defense, you know, one of those guys is going to have to step up, whether it's, you know, Storr or Sejan or Hepburn, you know, if they're going to win. But and then on the other side, you know, Northwestern's going to have to maintain the consistent offense that they've gotten from guys other than Boo Booey, because he can't do it all by himself on the road against a team that's been playing as well as Wisconsin has. And then finally on Saturday, honestly, I encourage everyone to watch every Big Ten game out there who listens to this podcast. However, I do not encourage anyone to watch Penn State Purdue. Penn State's been getting more fun as they've gone along. If you haven't watched Kanye Cleary, you know, that's a little bit fun, but I do not expect this game against Purdue to be close. And so if you're going to pick a game not to watch, pick that one.
Well said. And then rounding into Sunday, we've got Rutgers, Michigan State. That game will take place at Breslin. And I mean, this is going to be a get right game for Michigan State. They're going to, and there's no way, there's no better way to make sure your defense is up to snuff than by playing the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. So, you know, this should be a game that Michigan State has no problem winning. Rutgers is obviously still known for their defense, but Michigan State's been shooting the ball better. And if they bother to take care of the ball this time, they should be able to win comfortably, especially at home. And Rutgers is trending towards bad loss territory. So this is, you know, Michigan State's piled up a lot of losses. They cannot afford a loss to Rutgers at this point in the season. And finally, the last game of the weekend is the Maryland Terrapins heading to Champaign. I have trouble seeing how Maryland is going to come away with a win here, but if they're going to turn around their season, it's as good a time as any, I guess. So, Jameer Young is going to be huge in this game as just guard play goes. And we're going to need to see something more consistent. Dante Scott did play pretty well against Minnesota, at least shooting the ball. And he's gotten it turned around a little bit. And he's going to be a good foil for Coleman Hawkins. But I don't really know who on Maryland is going to be able to keep up with Domask. So I can't see Maryland actually escaping with a win. But even if they look relatively competent on the road, that would be a step not in the right direction, but out of the wrong direction for Maryland at this point.
All right, that's it for everything this week. We will be with you again same time next week. Thanks for listening.